And this is all of the future disorganized. He'll be telling you about the heat death of the universe and then what you're going to eat for breakfast tomorrow. And the Secret Service, the way they move is it's so funny to me because they move in ways I can't fathom. They have ways to know things about you that nobody else knows. If you bump into Slaanesh's forces, it's going to be the slowest way out.
Yeah.
I am Isander.
And I am Coda.
And thank you for tuning into this episode on our fixations. We're continuing the Warhammer one with Chaos Part 2, this time on Tzeentch and Slaanesh. So if you're looking for Khorne and Nurgle, that's in last week's episode. But before we get to these guys, we are currently working on our second Patreon goal of 250. When we hit that, we release the second limited patch, and it'll be sent out to those who are the first 250. If you come in after that, you miss it, just like the previous one, for 100. So if you want one of those, behind-the-scenes content, extra episodes, or to join in on the fun on Discord and with the community days, please head on over to patreon.com/IsanderandCoda, or click the link in the show notes. Again, it's patreon.com/IsanderandCoda. For those of you already there, thank you so much. You guys are amazing, and you're what keep us doing this. Lastly, you all have been amazing about commenting, liking, and sharing all of our stuff, so we appreciate your efforts as we fight the machine gods. It's just a fact. Short-form content is what people prefer nowadays. So thank you guys for helping us continue to carve a space here. We're all currently working on our goal for 10K, which we're very, very close to. So thank you guys for the help. Please keep it up. For you amazing audio listeners, keep subscribing with the auto download feature and leave a review. Obviously, 5 stars is preferred. Obviously. And a lot of you have been leaving those. But however you feel, say it with your chest. With the way we move, I'll be honest, we're going to crush 10K in no time. So, thank you guys so much. Now let's get into it with Chaos.
Chaos. The Chaos Gods. The extra two that we didn't cover last week.
Oh yeah, and these ones are fun too. I say this every faction I cover because all of them are really well written, but they've started to grow on me a lot.
Yeah.
For different reasons. They're not my favorite all around, but they have really cool aesthetics, and they all have something that shines for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Starting with the Changer of Ways.
The Changer of Ways.
Tzeentch. And the best way to look at Tzeentch is not to. At all. Literally don't look directly at him.
Don't look directly at him?
Kind of the same thing for Slaanesh, but for different reasons. You can look at Nurgle. Nurgle's great. He's the sentient trash bag.
Nurgle
He's
will probably cooking. Give you a pat on the head and say, oh, hey, hey, sport, how you doing?
Yeah, and you can see Khorne, you know, the same way you can stare at your angry stepdad. It's perfectly normal. Just don't stare too long. Don't stare too long, right? But
He might come at you with a shattered beer bottle.
That's Khorne for you. But do not look at Tzeentch at any costs, because just looking at him can and probably will drive you mad.
Really?
Oh yeah, like ripping your hair out, screaming and raving mad.
Oh.
Yeah, no. I have two descriptions for him, and both of them should give a very good sense of why. The first has him pegged as having skin that's ever changing, faces morphing in and out of it, ever twisting, with mouths that all either repeat what he's saying or repeat it with like a slight twist. So if he tells you go left today, some of them will say, yeah, go right, or take two lefts. And it's all just sowing doubt in you.
So his appearance is like a biblically accurate angel kind of tier stuff.
Kinda, yeah, with eyes rolling around, some fixed on you, some just kind of idly rolling around in the faces as they like morph in and out.
Yeah.
It's disconcerting.
The creepy wheel of eyes kind of dealio. Yeah.
Kinda, yeah. Another description of him has him pegged as a form doused in smoke. And in that smoke, you can see figures, you can see people, you can see places. And that's what Tzeentch is thinking about. And when he thinks about them and their fate, everyone who's pictured in that smoke, no matter how briefly, will find either their mind, their body, or their future irreparably altered. Oh yeah.
So if he just thinks about you, oh, your future, it's like a butterflies and hurricanes type dealio, where he's just like, think about it, oh something's changed.
It's more like, you know that we're all told Jesus loves us?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if Jesus stared at you. Like, it doesn't have to be for an hour. It's just Jesus looking right at you.
Just for a second. Just like,
even if it's for a second, my life's changed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but something's changed. I can just tell.
Yeah.
That's what Zinch is like.
Zinch is probably, I would figure he's probably more like evil Jesus, though, because he's Zinch.
It's just the divine looking direct, because Korn's like, we've seen this with the way Angron got to see the way Korn does, and Korn kind of like just sees everything, because it's a god. They can pay attention to everything at once.
Yeah, right? They're amorphous, like, fourth dimensional beings.
Exactly. I'm assuming Nurgle sees the same way, except, like, you know, he loves them all, right? Zinch is looking at you. He's looking right, like, he's thinking about you.
Aw.
Not
thinking
all.
Thinking of you.
Yeah, and then, like, a tongue appears in your belly button.
Oh.
Yeah. He's very big on Lovecraftian horror.
I love it.
He's actually the main bringer of Lovecraftian horror in 40K, which makes Nurgle, the sentient trash bag, jealous.
I think when we covered a little bit of Magnus the Red in our Primarchs Part 1, you mentioned like all of the weird Lovecraftian horrors that come out of that. And I was like, I don't describe anymore. I love it already.
Oh yeah. His units tend to have like spare eyes, tentacles left, right, and center, extra limbs, just body horror everywhere. He's got other units that are like these big manta rays swimming through the air, fish swimming through the air. It's just mind-bending stuff. Because why not? I mean, if you have a guardsman and he's just got two limbs, right? Like two hands to hold guns with, why not give him three more? More guns that way.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe he's better with a ninth eye. Ugh.
It's like if you combined the Void from, like, the Dishonored series with the mutants from Futurama.
Exactly. It's a mix of experimentation and sped-up evolutions is what's happening to most people who follow Zinch. And that's before we get to his mind. It's already bad enough to have a unit that can adapt to anything, right? Like, if you set one of Zinch's units on fire, it's probably just going to develop scales on the spot. Yeah,
just the accelerated evolution just suddenly
right? Or if you like sunder the ground beneath them, there's a good chance they're just gonna pop out wings,
because why not?
Why not? You have to be able to change.
It's the possibility of anything could happen.
Exactly. So that's scary enough, an army that can shift that quickly. But his mind is what makes them deadly, because he is cunning. To give you a sense of scale of how cunning, the Chaos Gods, there's usually one main beef for all of them. Like, Zinch really hates Nurgle, because Zinch is all about, let's change, the future is bright, and Nurgle's like, stay the way you are, I love you.
Zinch is just like, let's shake shit up.
Yeah, and Nurgle's like, why would we shake anything?
Why would we do it?
All of this is working like a joke.
You're sweet the way you are, honey. You don't need to change.
There's usually like each Chaos God hates one in particular, but they all don't get along very much. It's kind of referred to as this great game they play of like screwing each other over, but like screwing over the one they hate the most.
They're playing four-way chess.
Exactly. But they do have to work together occasionally. Just because, right? And whenever they do, Zinch is usually the guy negotiating those contracts.
Mm.
Because he's just that cunning and crafty. He's genuinely a very good planner. So when it comes to that time, he's the guy who's usually leading the charge there with a poison pill in the deal.
Yeah, I was going to say, he probably puts like everything in the fine print of that contract, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's a space lawyer. It's basically what it is.
The only one on my side is the blood-sucking lawyer.
He's Mr. Saul Goodman with five extra eyes. And like a tentacle holding a briefcase. Zinch is Mr. While you were studying the blade, I was eating an entire chess set. And playing checkers with your mom and girlfriend. He's Mr. Plans on plans on plans. It's kind of a meme of him where you'll like completely kick his teeth out. And he'll go, just as planned. I needed these ones removed and then run away. And you're like, you can't guarantee that's not what he wanted. You genuinely can't, because he has had plans that have come to fruition a millennia later.
Jesus.
Like he plans on such a grand scale. For most people, it's like, why?
You cannot even fathom the inner machinations of his mind.
It's that. So he's conniving, he's scheming, and of all the Chaos Gods, he's the one most likely to screw over his direct followers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Korn will pretty much never screw over one of his direct followers just because he's Mr. Honest. He'll tell you before he stabs you in the back, right?
Yeah, he's very blunt. He'll kill you quickly and kill you looking directly in your eye.
That's exactly right. Nurgle loves you too much to do that, but he may have to sometimes, right? And it hurts. it hurts.
Right? He doesn't want to. It just sometimes it happens.
So Nash screws over their units, but they do it in a different way. In the literal way. But Tzeentch just doesn't... He sees them as expendable pieces. They're all pawns.
Yeah, but you have to use the rooks every so often.
No. As far as Tzeentch is concerned, there's one queen on the board and a never-ending supply of pawns. It's unending. He's taken his right-hand man, this guy named... Demon bird named Kairos, because Tzeentch, he's a god. He can see a lot, but not everything. Even the future, just because of the way the future works in 40K, is difficult for him to wrap his head around. Because the way the future works in 40K is my favorite way, because this is the way that fixes time travel shenanigans of there's 10 different threads happening at once, and one of them may be true. I love this because if somebody can see the future in 40K, they can see a future.
They see a thread, not all of the threads.
They see me walking into my door this morning and not me opening it. One of those happened.
It could be anything. Anything could be happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Expect the unexpected.
So it's really...
Unexpect the expected.
It's really nice because it gives people with future sight, it nerfs them, basically. And,
yeah.
And it also makes it so Tzeentch can't fathom the future fully because he can see a lot of the strings, but it's everyone's future all at once, including his own. Even he can't manage all of that. So he went to this thing called the Well of Eternity in the center of the universe, I suppose, and took his right-hand man, Mr. Kairos, right-hand bird demon, Mr. Kairos, and chucked them in there.
Said, have fun, kiddo.
Just to see what would happen. This is a demon that doesn't age normally.
How do you mean?
Demons just don't age normally.
They just don't age normally?
It's just a fact.
They just exist.
In theory, it could age, but usually they die in combat before that's even a factor. They live on such long time scale. Like, Bellacor was the... We're not going to get into that. They live for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Is long. They don't age. For all intents and purposes, they don't age. He came out withered. After. Kairos came out, like... he's the only old demon.
I think I've seen pictures of him in my research. He's like the weird, like, two-headed bird thing with a staff, kind of like limping.
He had like a single head like the rest of them, but he came out stark raving mad, withered to almost dust, and two heads. One head sees everything that has ever been. He sees the past in its entirety, all of it, and comprehends it. Which is something Tzeentch can do too, so it's not that impressive. But it is very impressive because Tzeentch is a god. The more impressive one is the other head that sees everything that will be and comprehends it all.
Ah, that's a pretty strong ability,
right?
Considering most future sight characters in Warhammer are just like, they see a thread, not...
No, Kairos can see all of them and fathom them. The downside is he's... completely insane.
Yeah.
So he's just babbling, and he can't see the present.
Oh.
He can't see the present. Like, don't get me wrong, he's a strong demon. Nobody would ever want to fight him in their right mind, but if you got one-on-one with him, he'd be at a disadvantage because he could see where you're going to swing, but not where you're... He can see where you're going to swing and where you did swing, but not where you are swinging, which is kind of a problem.
Kind of a problem if
and
you're in
there
combat.
There are very few things in 40K that can swing fast enough for that, but there are some. There are some that could do that.
They just swing so fast that he can't future sight it before it happens.
But Tzeentch really loves him because he's like, oh my god, you know stuff I don't know. Downside is always babbling. So what Tzeentch did is he put him right next to his throne and surrounded him with nine times nine of his generals. And all their job is to write down everything he's saying as fast as he's murmuring it. Because he's telling you stuff that's happened, like everything that's ever happened and everything that will happen. And he's always talking.
He's just chatterboxing. Mm-hmm. He's the babbling brook.
Yeah, so there's nine times nine of his generals just sat there writing down furiously with the sub job of keeping him safe should somebody arrive in the present.
Obviously, yeah.
There you go. I quite like Kairos, and it's very strong, the ability to see all of the future. But again, this is all of the future disorganized. He'll be telling you about the heat death of the universe and then what you're going to eat for breakfast tomorrow. And it's not the most useful thing, but it's very good to have.
And you have to translate it like it's the Library of Babel.
Exactly. But your odds of assassinating him are slim, just because, again, the 9 times 9 guards next to him. If you haven't guessed, that's Zinsha's lucky number. It's 9.
I figured.
But to get to there, it's Zinsha's home. Zinsha's apartment.
Do you think he lives rent-free?
Oh, in everyone's heads. Oh, rent-free in everyone's heads. That's Zinsha's job. And if he's not in your head yet rent-free, he'll be there.
He'll be there at some point.
He calls it the Impossible Fortress.
It's a vegan fortress. The Impossible Fortress.
Just looking at it will drive you insane, basically.
I mean, if you look at Impossible Meats, and I say this as a pescatarian, it'll drive you insane.
Oh, yeah. There's a reason they haven't caught on. But to even to get... Let's say you can somehow not go mad instantly looking at this ever-shifting castle, which, when we cover Zinchek in depth, you will see why this castle is utter insanity.
Is it like Takeshi's castle on steroids?
It's... crystalline? It's a lot of crystals everywhere.
Oh, so it's one of those mirror mazes.
Not quite. I'll tell you the story of one person who was in there, and he looked at one of the reflective surfaces, and he was able to see his kids at all stages of their lives.
Aww.
But only when they were in crushing agony.
Aww.
Yeah. Aww. And also, time in the warp is already screwed up enough, but in Zinch's world, it's even more so.
He's taken effort to completely screw it.
I don't know if he's taking effort, but it's really screwed. So you'll look at something in there and you'll be like, oh, that was a second. It was like a month.
Oh.
Or you look at something and you're like, oh, I only looked at that for 5 seconds. It's been 20 years.
Look away, please. Mm-hmm. Please. Wake up, Daniel.
Yeah, the Impossible Fortress is a lot. But even to get there, you have to get through a maze that can only be traversed by the insane. You have to be batty to get there.
Oh.
Yeah. You can't... So if you're sane and you get through it somehow, you'll be rendered insane the second you look at it.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to be insane to get through it, so good luck.
Good luck.
Exactly.
It's like the Sheogorath realm from Oblivion, where only the mad survive, and you just have to pick a certain aspect of madness.
There's a mad, except for one girl. There's a little girl with a black dog that was able to get through the maze.
Aw, adorable.
We have no idea how. We have no idea what happened to her. But that's the only other person who's been able to get through without going...
But we have no idea what happened to her scares me.
Mm-hmm. Completely canon. She got through this maze for the insane and into the Impossible Fortress. No idea what came next.
I'm very scared because the warp doesn't seem nice to anybody.
By now, you and our viewers have probably figured out his shtick.
I think I have.
And you may be wondering to yourself, why on God's green earth would you follow this?
I am, kind of, a little bit.
He's going to mess with you. If he even thinks about you, things are going to get weird. Looking at him will render you insane. Why on God's green earth would you ever follow the most dickish Chaos God? The reason anyone follows him is because of the one virtue we have in our world that has made people move mountains and sacrifice everything. He is the God of hope.
Hope. Hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He is the God of change. That's why he gets worship. So long as you think things are gonna get better, or they can be better, you're feeding Zinch.
Damn, I might be a follower of Zinch by accident.
Exactly. If you just fight for a better world, you're worshiping the most dead chaos god. If you burn the midnight oil trying to advance yourself or your family, you're feeding him.
It's kind of ironic.
Every night you lay awake dreaming of a brighter tomorrow, you risk getting the attention of the mad god and the horrors that come with.
Okay, I might either be one of the greatest followers or one of the worst, because maybe this feeds him, but I don't lay at night thinking of all of the things I could be doing. I'd spend the day doing that. Night times are usually reserved for... Remember that cringy thing I did in middle school?
No, that's Zinch putting it there.
That's Zinch putting it there?
Of course.
What a dick.
That's his shtick. And not to mention, he's also got pretty much supreme jurisdiction over magic and learning. Not all of it. All the Chaos Gods use a little bit of magic, even Korn. But in the pursuit of playing Wizard 101, he's the guy who runs most of the servers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, learning is expanding yourself. It's changing. Going to Zinch.
Do you think he's paid for the premium subscription of Wizard 101?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. And he paid for it for his entire legion of Turbo Dorks.
Or did he rules lawyer his way into it?
God only knows. But all I know is him And the Thousand Sons are all playing a bunch of Wizard 101 together with their Primarch Magnus the Red. Some of them, like I mentioned, have even become floating space dust, forsaking their armor just to cast spells.
That sounds fun.
Right? Even though Magnus is a Primarch, and he is really smart, even he can't outsmart Tzeentch. He's occasionally gotten one up on him. Like, less than I can count on one hand.
But never, like, beaten him.
Never, like, and even then, Tzeentch has been like,
He kind of, like, let him have it, kind of dealio, like, rather than, like, oh, yeah, you beat me fair and square. It's just like, oh.
This was part of my plan. Yeah, this was part of my plan, but good job, good job.
Now, is that he actually schemed or a sore loser?
God only knows with him. All we know is at the end of the day, we adapt or die, and nobody represents this better than the main man himself, Tzeentch.
Or do we improvise and overcome? Well, he is the god of hope, so maybe we do improvise, adapt, and overcome.
Bear Grylls would be a terrifying worshiper of Tzeentch. Just imagine Bear Grylls running at you with extra limbs, consuming anything in sight in an attempt to survive. God, no. God, no.
He does his whole drinking his own pee routine, and it just strengthens Tzeentch somehow.
As a child, I will not lie, he made drinking piss seem normal. He made it seem very doable, I'm not gonna lie.
Not for me, that's just you, bud. That's a self-report right there.
No, no, it's not a self-report. I watched a ton of Bear Grylls. You don't remember the episode where he found an elephant turd and squeezed it for the water.
No, I don't.
Yes. So relative to that, oh yes, drinking piss sounds great. Give me a glass.
He would be a great follower of Tzeentch.
Exactly. I remember looking at that episode, I'm like, I would just die.
Squeezing the water out of an elephant turd?
Yeah, no, and I love it. He's so excited. He's like, oh yes, an elephant turd. These are high in water. And I was like,
oh yeah, this is a juicy one.
Yeah, and I was like, what are you doing? What are you actually doing right now?
This is Bear Grylls stuff.
I know. I can't. You know what? He's one of those people where he's ungodly rich right now, and he's earned it.
I think it's hilarious that he took Barack Obama out one time.
He did not.
He did.
Pre or post president?
I think it was like, I can't remember. I think it was either post or like right at the end of his term.
If it was,
I just remember that he still had like, even though he was doing most of the televised stuff and he was following Bear Grylls' leads, they still had, and on camera, the Secret Service following, like, 50 meters behind.
Of course. Well, they never lose the Secret Service protection. That's number one. Number two, really? If it was, no, never. It's for life. Oh. Every president, well, because it's like, every president's going to piss off at least half the country.
It is a high-risk position.
It's very high. It's the most lethal job, just purely statistics. But if it was towards the end of his presidency, I think that's even more hilarious, because that means there was a no-fly zone over wherever they were. That's number one. Number two, there were jets ready to be scrambled nearby at any moment. Number three, there was a dead zone, because every U.S. president flies with a dead zone around them. Number four, there was a helicopter nearby with his blood type ready, and a doctor.
If I remember correctly, this is like the middle of the Amazon, too.
Yeah, no, so all that had to fly out there. He had like 50 guards ready. And at a moment's notice, the U.S. would have fighter jets over him.
That's the safest survivalist show episode I've ever heard of.
If a capybara looked at him wrong, it could have died.
Capybara?
Oh, and the Secret Service, the way they move is it's so funny to me, because they move in ways I can't fathom. They have ways to know things about you that nobody else knows, but apparently whenever a president's coming on a show, they're like, vet the whole staff in secret, and then the day before they'll just show up and be like, don't come to work tomorrow, to random people, and you won't know why. You will have no criminal record at all, and they'll just go, no, don't come to work tomorrow. And the best guess
is, you sent a shady text to someone in elementary school, you're not allowed.
Or it's like your friend of a friend of a friend texted a communist's friend once, and it's like, well, we can't risk it. To be fair, they're very good at their job. Not many presidents have died.
In the recent history,
God bless the Secret Service. They do some good work.
They do some work, yeah.
So That was probably the safest episode of Bear Grylls ever.
Mm-hmm.
But on to some changes going on in the real world. Other than that, again, in the realm of AI, an ever-changing one.
So Zinch is having fun with this AI thing.
Oh God, yeah. This one's really recent too. You were here for this, actually. We've been seeing all kinds of applications left, right, and center, and I saw one that I wanted to talk about, which was this guy who is incredibly awkward. Incredibly awkward. Did not know how to talk to girls to save his life, and he used AI assistants to create a dating profile and talk to girls as this kind of like man mystique kind of guy that he could not live up to at all, but that's what he went with. Unfortunately, it worked a bit too well. He wound up getting dates, and he couldn't live up to it.
See,
obviously he couldn't live up to it.
I was here for this. I heard this story.
Let me set the scene.
Let me set the scene.
All the dates ended poorly because the girls in this case didn't vibe in person, right? And they felt like they were catfished when they found out that I was vibing with the machine the whole time, not you. His argument against it was, I have a really good personality. I'm just cripplingly shy. So I was using this to like break the ice, and I was hoping that I could get through to the real me. My question is, do you think he did the right thing, or is it proper catfishing?
I think it's proper catfishing. I really do think it's proper catfishing, because it's not you talking to the person. It's ChatGPT. You're not, like, intriguing this person. And honestly, I think the worst part of it is not the catfishing. Because, like, I mean, catfishing happens on a daily basis.
Sure.
In normal circumstances. I think the worst part about this is that dude's riz will never advance. He will never get any practice because he's relying too much on a robot doing it for it. So he's not going to, and he's living the unfortunate reality of he's not going to wake up his like personality. He may have a great one, but he's not getting any practice using it because he's not using it.
I actually disagree. I think his riz could get better from monkey see, monkey do.
Mm.
That's the end of it. You, a human being, can learn very quickly on their own. Don't get me wrong. But having a model to follow after speeds it up. So him being able to use that and kind of field test it, so long as he's learning from it, could actually help him improve his game just by saying, so that's what that did. And that's why it worked. I never even considered that. So it could help him. I do think this one is catfishing, though, a bit. I would prefer it more if he came up with three responses and the bot chose one for him.
Yeah.
Like, he thought one of three, like kind of like having your buddy kind of coach you, like, oh, what should I say to this girl?
And then the bot picked the most optimum response.
Yeah, exactly. So that I would be much more fair game with, but it's equivalent of handing your phone to your buddy to, like, text a girl for you, and I'm like, it's kind of not right, you know?
My thing is, that would be good advice, but I don't think he's taking the whole practice aspect of it to heart. Because, again, you're correct. I was here to hear this story. And what you left out was this man's idea of a great date was trying to sound intellectual. He took this girl to three libraries.
She liked reading.
He took this girl to three libraries.
And to be fair, the girl said she liked the date because it was unique. Not to be fair, ChatGPT probably chose that date. But it's a unique enough date.
ChatGPT, what are the hottest date spots for an intelligent woman?
Library.
And it picked up three libraries.
Yeah. So
if they're cool libraries, then like, sure. Like, there's this one library, and I think it's in like Northern England that's like huge. It's like literally the inspiration for the one library in Star Wars that they show off. Like, I think they literally copy pasted it and rotoscoped, like, you know, sci-fi weird like neon light books onto all of the bookshelves. It's a really, really cool looking library. If somebody took me on a date to that library, I think that would be the keeper.
So, see, library dates work. Case in point, I like this guy.
Only certain libraries.
I think he's advanced.
But if you're in the middle of, like, nowhere Nebraska, and you find, like, a random set of three libraries that are just in the middle of someone's suburb,
it's better than a coffee shop, because God knows everyone's been on, like, coffee shop dates 10 different times.
Coffee shops are a classic, though. Coffee shops are the ultimate...
Overplayed.
They're overplayed, but they're the ultimate I can actually hold a conversation date. Most people go to coffee shops and they don't do the whole I can hold a conversation thing, mm-hmm. because they think, oh, this is the generic spot. But if you are a person who's, like, genuinely a great conversationalist, mm-hmm. there's no better place to go than a coffee shop.
Mm.
And that's why I've never taken someone on a coffee shop date, because I'm a horrible conversationalist.
We will agree to disagree. I like the creativity of this guy. And I'll be honest, being awkward is hard to get through. So if he doesn't have any mentors in his life and this is what he chooses to use, I can't fault him for that. I can only advise,
mm-hmm.
which in this case, I'd advise use it more as a mentor than anything else.
Yeah, no, that is genuinely the best way. Because, I mean, I've also been in, and I'm still working to get out of, the, like, awkward phase sometimes. Like, sometimes you get that awkward silence and you're like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? Because I've been an introvert for most of my life.
Oh, not me. I was born with a silver tongue.
No, not me. I was born as an introvert. I'm slowly growing out of it.
I put the riz in charisma.
I hate you. That's a disgusting joke.
It's just true.
Gross.
It's just true.
Anyway, it's really hard. It's really hard to get out of the awkward phase. But, like, if you find yourself... this is genuine advice, by the way. If you find yourself a great mentor who's like, oh, this is a silver-tongued person, I can learn from them, take that opportunity. Take that opportunity. Because knowing someone who's, like, a great conversationalist and can teach you how to, like, improve... I hate the phrase improve your riz, but improve your riz... Stay friends with them.
My question is, do you guys think he's in the right, or do you think the girls are in the right for feeling catfished? Do you think it's completely unacceptable that he used an AI for this, or do you think it's not ideal but with a little bit of tweaking it's not a bad idea? I'm curious about what your thoughts are.
I'm in the middle ground. I think it's catfishing, but he still has room to improve.
Oh, I'm with you. I think it's catfishing, but if he tweaks his approach a bit, it could very easily help him out a lot. Moving on from charisma to the most charismatic god of all four, Slaanesh.
Slaanesh.
This is difficult. I tried very hard to get Slaanesh to work on YouTube. It's basically impossible.
Yeah.
I looked all across, and very few people do them right without cutting out way too much. So what I wound up doing is just making full deep dive on them and putting it as a Patreon episode this week. And we are going to play the beginning clip from there just to kind of set the scene. It gets more explicit from there. If you want to watch it, you can watch it at patreon.com/IsanderandCoda. But it does a good job of setting the scene, and then we're going to do as best as we can to flesh it out while staying within PG. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Their domain is just excess in general. Mm-hmm. Just pure and simple. Overdo anything and you're technically in their territory. Those people who like to see bigger and bigger numbers in their bank accounts, worshipping Slaanesh. Those people who eat like 10 meals a day, worshipping Slaanesh. The people who, like, love the limelight all the time, like Kardashian style, worshipping Slaanesh. It's just how it works. Overdo anything that, to any extreme, like overdo sadness, overdo joy, overdo pain, you're inadvertently feeding Slaanesh. Which is kind of why they're, like, weirdly strong. Like, Korn's the strongest right now, like I mentioned, because of the whole...
There's a lot of war happening all over.
Yeah, yeah.
All over.
Yeah, Korn's a god of war. There's war always happening. He's doing great, right? And Nurgle is a god of death, a living trash bag. So, yeah, he's doing great for himself. But there's a theory that I like that's not fully canon,
mm-hmm.
but is kind of canon, where the gods of chaos fear Slaanesh in specific because they all like their work. Korn loves curb stomping people.
Yeah.
A bit too much.
So it's like it's a kind of trying to gauge the dial a little bit. So you do your own gimmick, mm-hmm. but not in such an excess way that
no,
like,
they all always will overdo it. Like mm-hmm. Korn will always overdo it. Have like he has berserkers. Like they will always overdo it.
So the chaos gods are like also accidentally fueling another chaos god.
Is what they're afraid of. It's what they're afraid of. They're not that strong, but they could be,
in theory,
because their domain is just overdo anything.
Mm-hmm.
Overdo anything and you're going to feed them. So the only way you avoid feeding them is restraint.
Yeah.
Which is really hard.
Because when you have a gimmick, and this is your gimmick, mm-hmm. you do your gimmick.
I would argue it's easier to like not punch somebody out, die of boils everywhere, or plan for 10 years, as opposed to overdoing anything. It's just a personal thing. I feel like that's the hardest one of the bunch. But that's why they're weirdly strong, right? It's really well shown with how they came to be. Slaanesh is kind of the youngest of the Chaos Gods. Of the bunch, they're like, again, youngest. Mm-hmm. They're still really old. But in the grand cosmic scheme of anything, they're like relatively new kids on the block, right? The way they came to be can really be shown well with a story from a different universe altogether, right? You may not have heard of this because I'm a big Superman guy, but you're not. I was a DC kid. Have you seen The Man Who Has Everything?
The Man Who Has Everything? No, mm-hmm. I have not. I'm going to be honest. Mm-hmm. I've not ever been like a superhero kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Never, really.
As a kid I was.
I mean, I was like there for the MCU, but only because like everybody was there for the MCU.
I mean, who wasn't?
Even who wasn't there for the MCU?
Who wasn't there for the MCU?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I've never like been like a superhero guy.
I was a superhero kid. I was a DC kid through and through. Mm-hmm. And The Man Who Has Everything is a Superman story that was originally a comic book, and then it was adapted to a cartoon that did the story really, really well. The basic premise is it's Superman's birthday, and what the hell do you get him? What the hell do you get the man who has everything? No, like, really? Right? He's faster than sound, stronger than a speeding locomotive, can leap tall buildings in a single bound. What do you get that guy? He can see through buildings. Like, he's fine. Anything he wants, he could just get.
Something from the heart.
Spoilers, but we're getting there.
Something from the heart.
So they struggle very hard to figure that out.
See, I'm an empath.
Oh, Jesus.
So I already know the answer to this question.
Well, you don't know where the story's going. So stay with me.
Okay.
So they struggle to figure this out. And they finally figure stuff out. Each of them figures out something to bring him. And they show up to his Fortress of Solitude. And they find him, like, tied up in these vines with a plant, like, buried in his chest.
Kinky.
Oh, Jesus Christ. It's a kid's cartoon. I mean, it's on topic.
Yeah, we're talking about Slaanesh. I know, but so like
I know it's my childhood, though.
Well,
have some decency. Have some decency.
Okay, now I have to ask the questions. Why are you factoring your childhood into a discussion about Slaanesh?
Let me cook is the answer. They find him trapped with this thing, and what the plant does is it gives you hallucinations of your wildest desires. It's everything you could ever want, right? Which, let's finally see. Where do you get the man who has everything? And I love the answer it gives because it's less. That's what you get the man who has everything.
He wants things taken away.
His happy day is like him on Krypton with like a kid and wife, goes to work, pays his bills, sees his grandpa there, like pals about. Like, that's his life. He's just a normal dude. That's about it. I think he still shaves using laser vision, but like, no, I don't think he does in that episode.
No, because if he's on Krypton, yeah, he doesn't have the laser vision. He's perfectly normal.
Perfectly normal dude. That is exactly what he wants. Mm-hmm. And there's this really heartrending scene when he finally figures out that the jig is up. This is a hallucination. Right?
Yeah, this is a weird like plant thing.
Exactly.
I'm trapped in it.
And he has to let go of that desire. So he has this really heartrending moment where he has to turn his back on his family and like say deuces to his kid. Well, like the kid's weeping and he doesn't understand why this is happening, right? And he gets out, punches up the bad guy, yada, yada, yada. But the moral of that story is I love the way it posits that all you can give this immortal super being is just a normal life. That's all they want. They want less.
Take shit away.
Yeah, take stuff away from me.
Take his privileges away.
Right? The opposite is true in Warhammer. The Eldar were Superman levels. They didn't die. They conquered everything. They didn't have any problems. The
Necrons had gone away, so they were just like, oh, party.
Yeah, Eldar at their prime were doing great. They were doing great. And so they had everything. And instead of choosing less, they chose more.
Because more is less.
That's what they went for. They chose to just keep going for more.
Less is not more. More is less.
Meaning when they're faced with the same exact problem the boy in blue faced, they just doubled it down. They're like, I don't want to be guarding. I don't want to be gardening unless I'm being choked while it's happening. Yeah. We're not playing golf unless I'm like, there's an Eastim kit attached to me.
Jesus.
Yeah.
No, Jesus.
Yeah. They cranked it up to 11. And even then it wasn't enough. They kept piling more and more. No feasts anymore, but rivers of wine and food with the goal of eating everything the universe had to offer. And still they kept going. We're immortal anyway, so why bother punishing any crime? They let the criminals go. Life is spicy now. Will I make it home? Will my throat get slit?
So this is like a Dionysian paradise right here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just like so much debauchery happening. So much drunkenness.
Oh, God, yeah. No, and it was bad. The blood was literally running through the streets because they let every maniac through. Rule of law was abolished because it's like, you kill me, I'm going to reincarnate in like 5 minutes anyway. This doesn't matter.
This is Vegas, the planet.
Yeah, it's planet. It's Vegas, the civilization. So it's several.
Apologies planets. To our viewers from Las Vegas. We still love you.
Vegas is really fun. Vegas is a very really unique place. Mm-hmm. Entire stars were destroyed just to feel how warm they're going to get. But yeah, that's it. They just kept cranking the dial. Planets were completely converted to be sadist zones where anything went. Anything went.
I love the S&M planet.
Oh, God. No, it was planets.
Planets?
Yeah, planets. They were very dominant.
Oh, were they? Mm-hmm. Were they also submissive?
Some, yeah. They stopped eating regular food and were like, what if we went for these other species that fight back? Dinner's more exciting when it puts up a fight. Now, what if we don't bother with the whole killing them thing first? Dinner's more fun this way. Yeah, they just kept pushing the dial.
They went
deep.
Jesus.
At some point, somehow they're like, whoa, 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 whoa.
What are we doing?
Where does this end? To which the others went, end?
End?
End? And so those ones packed it up, called it quits, and like went for the Amish simple life. Mm-hmm. They chose the less option that Superman chose. So they left.
They finally had like a moment of post-nut clarity and they went. Yeah.
Post
they were
nuts clarity.
Nuts clarity.
Yeah.
They looked at their phone and like,
yeah.
What am I doing?
So they left behind that writhing mass of the worst that you can imagine. And they
Writhing
mass. Yeah.
So why'd you have to use those terms?
Because that's what they were. They were just this writhing mass looking for feeling anything and everything all the time.
Everything everywhere all at once.
Again, right?
But in the horny way.
And not just it's everything's being overdone. It's not just horny. Mm. They're eating people.
Yeah.
Like everything's overdone.
No, it's like bad.
It turns out the ones who left were right. Things did get out of hand.
Yeah.
They've been out of
hand. They were already out of hand.
But they got very out of hand, which is a side tangent where 40K follows my favorite rules for deities, which is they work on worship. Mm-hmm. The more people have worshiping you, the stronger you become. And if enough people worship you, even if you don't exist, now you do.
Yeah.
All these people, all this hedonism and excess, literally running unchecked for decades, slowly spiraling into more and more depravity, counts as worship for something.
Worship.
Exactly. It counts as worship for something. And since all those people were doing all these things that there wasn't a god for yet, came Slaanesh.
There's a god now.
Mm-hmm. So that's who they are and what they do. In modern 40K, they are sex, drugs, and rock and roll. that's all it is. And they have three main forces fighting for them. Their army of BDSM demons, their traitor legion, and the worst of the three, the Dark Eldar.
The Dark Eldar.
The demons are what you expect from them. You don't want them anywhere near you, but the plus side is it's going to be relatively quick. Relatively quick. Just to be clear, all of this will be slow. Of all three, if you bump into Slaanesh's forces, it's going to be the slowest way out.
Yeah.
But
you're going to be experiencing like a death by snoo-snook type situation.
Oh, yeah. But of the three, the demons are going to be the quickest. It's not that bad. It's not that bad, relatively speaking. Definitely not all of them are quick about ending you, but the odds for a demon just you quickly are better than the Traitor Legion. They get creative.
Everybody's so creative.
And in the worst ways.
Look at how different this is.
Instead of the chain swords and guns like the rest of the Marines do, they use guitars with amps so loud it will turn you to goo.
Goop.
And sound guns that will just fire pure sonic waves and do the same thing, turn you to goo.
If you've watched the 1984 Dune movie, you get the shtick.
Yeah, they also have even more organs than a regular Marine. Purely with the purpose of heightening the enjoyment of what you feel in war.
More organs?
Even more.
Like, they just shoved more into their body?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's all to,
I could use a second heart.
No, it's all to enhance the feelings you already feel during war. The adrenaline rush is stronger. The pain's stronger. The smells are stronger. Your senses are all heightened. They feel it all, and they're loving it.
Mm. They're doing the whole excess thing up.
Oh yeah, they revel in it. So they're not great.
Me no like you.
They're the type where if you stab them, they go yes. Like they may help guide your blade and like make it go longer, just because this is nice. I'm enjoying this.
For our audio listeners, I have a face of shock, yeah. Infinite shock.
Yeah, no, like actually, like if you stab them through and through, they may just. Thank you.
Gross.
They're not great. They're Yucky. Not great. But there's the Dark Eldar, who are worse in every way.
I've heard tidbits.
Just
tidbits. I didn't like what I heard.
This is going to be hard. They will squish you into a meat square that's still alive, and then twist you about like a Rubik's Cube.
How are you still alive as a meat square?
They get creative. Slaanesh has domain over creativity and expression.
I don't want to become Super Meat Boy.
Well, that's what they're going to eat. And then they're going to use you as a Rubik's Cube while you're still alive.
I don't want to be Rubik's Cube Super Meat Boy.
Mm-hmm. They are the roughest of the bunch.
Are they the toughest?
No.
Oh, so they're not the roughest and the toughest.
No, they're just the roughest. Oh. And it's all because Slaanesh is right at their doorstep. It's like Slaanesh and the Dark Eldar's relationship is basically they have a firm grip on their heart. And at any moment they could yank it. So the way the Dark Eldar do this is by stalling hard. So anything Slaanesh would do to them, they stall by doing it to you.
Mm. And Slaanesh is just like, well, the same amount of suffering is being done. Mm-hmm. I guess I could let you off for a couple months.
Either way, you're overdoing it, and that's what I'm here for, baby. Slaanesh is happy. The Eldar aren't being tormented forever. You're very unhappy. It's a win-win-lose.
You're a meat cube.
Mm-hmm. It's a win-win-lose.
I don't think I'd be happy as a meat cube. So I feel for the meat cubes.
All of them are bad. Don't get me wrong. All of them are bad. It's worse than anything else you could bump into 40k, except for, like, the stuff that's just made to be grimdark for grimdark's sake. Like the Demonculaba. We can cut in here. Like the Demonculaba and stuff, where it's just, this is just meant to gross people out.
Yeah.
It's overkill.
Yeah.
But Slaanesh is overkill done right. Because it's with a purpose, actually.
Entire shtick. Entire shtick is overkill.
I don't mind overdoing it in their case. There's just some things in Warhammer where I'm like,
why?
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 Why? Why? Why? It's mad scaring the maidens away energy sometimes. It's mad scaring the maidens away energy.
No maidens?
Yeah. No, oh, wow, I have to make that a shirt with Iron Warrior Hansu. You won't get who that is.
I don't know who that is.
But the people who are deep in will, and he is maidenless. Yeah, but thank you for tuning in to this.
You You forgot to do the outro while we're doing the credits roll.
Hold on.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the podcast. The names you've been seeing for you visual viewers. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the podcast. The names you have been seeing scroll by, for those of you watching the video, are our wonderful patrons who help us make all of this happen. If you want to join them and all the other perks I mentioned earlier, head on over to the Patreon. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the podcast where we covered 4D chess and 50 Shades of Pain. The names you've been seeing scroll by have been our wonderful patrons, whom without them, none of this is possible. You may be noticing the quality's gone up a bit. We're a little bit crisper on your screens.
Just a slight bit crisper.
That is thanks to them, so we really appreciate them. If you want to join the names wherever they happen to fall and get all those awesome perks we mentioned, please head on over to the Patreon. For those of you already there, again, thank you so much.
You guys are wonderful, wonderful.
You're the reason we keep doing this, and we are excited to see you next week for third place.
Third place? Mm-hmm. Who was third place?
We're not going to spoil the video.
Find out next time on Dragon Ball Z Kai. Oh, you're stupid.